media business is in a complete state of chaos. When everything is working, it's only the big guys that win. When everything is broken, there's massive opportunity for the little guy. People make up the product, they make up the concept, and then they hand it to the marketers and say, create a story. But the best way to do it is all of the marketing, all of the storytelling should be baked into the product.
What can brands do, or what are y'all doing to position yourself or corporations to say yes?
You have to have the systems in place to catch the money. Knowing those three things and that system and being able to deliver that and say, okay, now we need a $10 million check. Yeah. That's the secret.
That's good.
It has to work where it has to work.
Welcome to Circle of Greatness. It's your host, Nehemiah Davis. And today we got somebody special. We talking about a marketing genius. We talking about a CEO. We talking about an entrepreneur. We talking about an author, CEO of Revolt, and so many other things he got going on. Deitavio Samuels, what's up, my guy?
It's good, King. Yeah, it's good to thank you for having me, man. It's good
you,
to
man.
Be here. It's good
I sent out
here.
The call to Dre and said, hey, can you get my guy on a show? And a week later, you're here, man.
Yeah, you know.
I appreciate you coming on, man.
Look, once we got the invite, there was no other place that I'd rather be. So thank you for making
It's funny, when I look through your social media, you're normally the person doing all the
That's
interviews.
Exactly right.
Like, you're the interviewer. So exactly now you're in the other seat for
Absolutely.
The day, man. So,
which I'm looking forward to seeing how that comes out.
Yeah, man. Right. I appreciate it. So, man, I've been reading on the story from Duke to just Stanford and just everything you got going on and being coined this marketing executive for the last 10 to 15 years. It's been this thing of you the guy on marketing. How did you even give me the story? Like, what was the tell me a little bit about the journey of you getting to that point of marketing executive. How did you know you wanted to be this marketing? Because I love marketing.
Yeah, so, me too. I'm in love with marketing. Yeah. So I went to Duke University, like you said, for undergrad. And I've always been good at school. You know, my truth was I was the person who didn't necessarily need to buy books, could show up to class every now and then. And maybe I wasn't going to get an A at Duke, but I'd get a B, B minus, right? Yeah. And I was comfortable with that. And it wasn't until second semester, senior year, I took a marketing course. And bruh, it was like, I never felt that type of energy before, that excitement. It was like for the first time I wanted to buy every book, for the first time I wanted to go to every single class. And I'm a big believer that you have to follow the breadcrumbs, like you got to follow those things that are inside of you. And so from that moment, I was like, I want to be a marketer. Yeah. And so I started doing the research. What I realized is, you know, top marketing job was a CMO. Most CMOs had their MBAs back in those days. Yep. And so I decided I knew what I wanted to do. Marketing was it. My job coming out of college was not a marketing job. So I told them I wouldn't be coming there. And I set my sights on trying to get to be CMO as quickly as possible.
Wow. And fast forward, you're running Revolt.
Yeah.
Going crazy. So for
Never
you,
actually made it to the CMO role.
Right. Yeah. You went right above it. Yeah. So for you, give me what was that book you read at that time?
So it was just school. It was just a class.
That
it
one
was,
marketing class.
Exactly.
Okay.
It was just a class.
Then you just saying you
That's
delve
it.
Into books.
That's
Give
it.
Me
That's
two
it.
Of your top favorite books.
Oh, man. Favorite books, The Alchemist, if you're into fiction.
Paulo Coelho.
Oh, man. Yeah. And just anything Paulo Coelho. Yeah. Like his gems are genius and brilliant. From a marketing standpoint, I'm trying to think of like books that may be a little bit older, but have absolutely kind of set my framework for how I move. There's a book called Baked In by Alex Bogusky.
Okay.
And the whole core idea behind that book is usually what happens is people make up the product, they make up the concept, and then they hand it to the marketers and say, create a story. Yeah. But the best way to do it is all of the marketing, all of the storytelling should be baked into the product, right? Mm. And so I think one of the reasons even people still refer to me as a marketer, even though I'm a CEO, it's because I bring that type of thinking to everything, right? Yeah. It's like, all right, if we're going to do this, the marketing has to be baked in as opposed to trying to figure it out at the end.
And I want to go deeper on that because I don't want to miss it. I think that was a heavy gem. And I've read that you've done that for so many of these large companies who really want to connect with the culture. They want to connect with the consumer. So walk me through you working with a large company and them making them understand the concept of baking that marketing to really attract us as clients. Like, walk me through, what does that look like?
Yeah. So usually what happens is, again, you'll just come down to here's the product and people are going to try to figure out the messaging.
Yeah.
What is the right way to sell this car? What is the right way to sell this shoe? I'll give you an example, several examples I can use from back in the days when I was working with Chrysler. Olivier Francois, super creative CMO, With him, we were able to create several limited edition vehicles. We created a limited edition Chrysler 300 Motown edition.
Okay.
Piano key interior, okay. 100 Motown songs already in it. Again, by the time you get ready to market that thing, you already know what the story is, right? That type of a thing. As opposed to waiting and saying, let's take a Chrysler 300 and then figure out what story we want to tell around the Chrysler 300. Similarly, you know, back in the days, this is before Beats took off, before Beats was purchased by T-Mobile, Apple, all of that, we were running around seeing young black and brown kids wearing these different headphones. And so we went to Olivier and we're like, yo, we got to put these Beats speakers in Chrysler vehicles.
Yeah.
And so he put them in Jeeps and in Dodges and in Fiats. And then we were able to take them. We didn't even have to do normal commercials. We started putting them in music videos, a music video with 50 Cent, Will.i.am, Carly Rae Jepsen, right? But again, the marketing was built in because now here were these cars with this differentiated speaker set that all of the people from the culture were interested in. Yeah. The marketing did itself. You know what I mean? Like at that point in time. So that's what I mean when I talk about the idea.
That's powerful. And just even, is it an easy conversation, or how difficult is it to get a brand like Chrysler, who may only been dealing with their specific speakers, say, I'm going to go ahead and test with Dre Beats, who's a new, they only really do headphones, and they're going to do a car speaker. Yeah. So us put our brand on the line. We've been to Chrysler, I'm sure 100+ years. To this new Beats brand, like how difficult is
those? A difficult conversation.
Okay, yeah.
Because usually when you think about marketing, you think about, like, people will talk about the four P's, right? Price, product, placement, otherwise known as distribution, and promotion marketing. And a lot of companies, when you're looking at corporate America, the marketers don't own all four of the P's. They don't own pricing. They don't own distribution. A lot of times they don't even own product, right? So you think about it, a Chrysler, it's not the marketers who are coming up with the car.
Yeah.
It's a product team, right? So 90% of the time, the people you're interacting with only handle the messaging, only handle the communication. And so to be able to have a conversation to get them to think upstream about a whole new product, which might have different pricing and different distribution, is absolutely not an easy conversation to have. Yeah. But for me, it's like, that's where the magic is.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, that's where the magic is. That's where you get to truly differentiate a product. That's where you get to create something that the culture, I don't want to, like, the word is like lust for, but like, will desire.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, that's where the magic is.
Yeah, that's good. That's powerful. And I love marketing. I'm always just thinking of more ways to just get more out of things, right? And one, your book, your last book, Exist No More, squeezing the most out of things, right? Talk about, like, is that how you approach business life? Just really maxing out. Give me a little bit about the premise of why that was created, because I haven't had a chance to read it yet, but I'm gonna read it. But every single day, I'm trying to squeeze everything out of my life because I don't know how much time I got left.
Amen.
So,
amen.
And we're young, but it's still like things are happening every day. I don't want to kind of play with it. So, give me a little bit of thoughts on that.
Yeah. So, the origin of the book is I was in my 20s and surrounded by a lot of super dope friends, and it just felt like everybody was kind of trying to find their way or find their path. And I had found this voice that was really just based on maximizing your potential, living life to the fullest. Paulo Coelho actually had that quote, most of us don't live, we just exist. It's something like that, right? And so what I wanted to do was write a book for my friends to inspire us to get the most out of life. There's a Watchmen, is that the show? Watchmen on HBO. Have you ever
heard
seen
about it? I haven't seen it.
Okay, Mr. Manhattan. All right, so Watchmen is a show. Mr. Manhattan can see the future. He's on his first date with Regina King. And she's like, so if you can see the future, tell me about how this thing ends. And he's like, it ends in tragedy. And she's like, well, if it's gonna end in tragedy, why would we even go on this journey together? And his answer was basically, but doesn't all love end in tragedy?
Mm.
It's not about the end. It's about everything you can do in the middle, right? And so that's what I really wanted to do, was write a book that would encourage myself, my friends, the people around me that I love, to squeeze the most out of this thing that we have. You can't control your beginning, the cards you were dealt. You can't control the end, how you go out. What we can control is this peace on the inside.
Yeah.
And then the second thing that your question makes me think about is, I absolutely, and I think we probably have this in common, live my life trying to find the best way to optimize the machine that I'm in, right? And so we talked from the Aura to the Whoop to the what supplements am I putting in my butt, right? Every single thing I'm doing, every single day I'm waking up trying to figure out how do I get this machine that God gave me to perform at its highest peak.
That's good. Right? That's good. What's some of my ex supplements you taking next?
Okay, so right now I'm actually trying something new. I'm on an experiment. I'm the king of experiments.
Yeah. You're vegan too, right?
I would say I'm 80%.
You vegan-ish.
Vegan-ish. Right, exactly. It's not the lifestyle. I'm 80% plant-based. When I'm home, I don't touch anything but plant-based. And I did that because same thing. How do you become optimized? I was watching a documentary on Netflix called Game Changers.
Okay.
And it was basically about all of these athletes who had shifted their level of performance to the highest level of performance of their career simply by going plant-based, right? And so these are people who are now 35 beating numbers they were doing at 25, right? And so again, I wanna optimize my machine. And if that means I need to eat plant the majority of the time, then that's just what it is, right?
It's funny you said, so I just read this study about how well sauna works for you. And I wasn't aware of it.
Now tell me.
They were... And again, I don't know the scientific behind it. I've read it on Google. Okay. But they're like, you know, they're saying doing the sauna 3 days out of the week, 5 to 20 minutes a day will reduce Alzheimer's and dementia by 50%.
Count me in.
Right? So I'm like, well, I go to the gym and play ball 3 to 5 days a week at LA Fitness.
Sure.
When we're done playing ball, we're sitting out on a step talking for 20 minutes. I said, I told my guy, Ash Cash, yo, let's take this same conversation inside the sauna.
That's it.
Because we're already here.
Yeah.
Right? Yes. And it's funny you say it. So my guy, he'd been trying to lose weight. He wanted to lose 100 pounds. Last 35 days, just from going raw vegan, he's down 35 pounds.
I'm watching Ash's journey on. I'm watching on Instagram. It looks incredible. It looks
so
incredible.
So I bet him, right? So the bet was.
Oh, are you the one that bet him?
I bet him. I said, yo, bro, you got to go raw vegan for 30 days. If not, you owe me $10,000.
Okay.
I didn't put nothing on the line myself. You owe me if you don't do it. So if you don't do it, you owe me. But if you do it, you won. You win. You win.
Yeah.
So he's down 35 pounds simply from going raw vegan. That's so when you say optimizing your life. So for me, it's been 16 months. And it's so funny today, I had to... this dude is in town, Les Barbecue, and he just got these oxtails. I love oxtails. And I just look at his page every day. I'm like, yo, I'm ready to break. But it's been 16 months, no meat, fish, no meat, fish, or seafood. And I'm like, well, if I eat one oxtail, I eliminate that. I can't say 16 months anymore.
Yeah.
So it's like, it's been.
Can you feel a difference? Can you feel a difference in your body? Where do you feel a difference from shifting to becoming vegan? Yeah,
so I think for me, and not fully vegan because I'm still eating the, I'm eating eggs and cheese. That is my only, that gets me the cheese. And they say cheese is addicted, they say. But that's my only, I got to let go of the cheese and the eggs. But I can't say, you know, a lot of people, I can't say I feel a great difference in, sorry to say this if you're eating, but when I go to bathroom, it's no more sitting on the toilet. It's like you sit down, you go to bathroom, and you're out. It's not 30 minutes. It's not. So I could say that's one difference, but the difference I really feel is discipline. It's when I sit down in front of people, I'm my guy, Chef Stryker, making lamb chops, which is my favorite, and I sit there and I don't eat them, and I just say I'm going to be disciplined. I don't drink. I haven't drunk for 15 years, so when people around me drinking, it just discipline. It's not even a thing where I can do it. It's I haven't because I had a bad experience, so I won't do it, but it's discipline. Oh, so what I've learned from my journey is discipline. My kids have been born vegan, and my wife's vegan. So it's not like in the house, my wife is making meat. So it's like, and my big daughter, she eats regular food, but she's still not in a crib hooking up turkey bacon, things that could be like, you know what? Tempting. I might need to, so.
I'll tell you, when I did it, I didn't feel a big difference immediately. But what I will say is I've wrestled with chronic back pain probably since 2012. Mm. And the way that I would describe it is it always felt like there was an incredible amount of inflammation in my back and in my body. And ever since I made the shift, like I'm saying, like I fly 200,000 plus miles a year.
Crazy.
And every single one of those flights hurt.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Today, crazy. I can do a 3-hour flight and then not hurt. I can do a 4-hour flight and then not hurt, right?
You go to chiropractor?
I I have all the things. So I swim every single day. If I'm at home, I'm swimming. I get a massage every single week. And I have, and it's not just any massage. Like I literally find what I need healers. You know what I mean? People who can fix my
this
body.
Is what they do. Exactly. They're not just rubbing on you. Like, oh, I know you got something here. You're tight here.
That's exactly right. Good. I had my massage yesterday and she's working me. She's literally saying, I can't get you to adjust. She's my chiropractor, but she's also my massage therapist and she's stretching. You know what I mean?
Like,
she's
got all the tools. You gotta give me her info.
I'm telling you, she is one of the best.
She do house calls?
Absolutely. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. I'm a king of convenience. So.
Me too. Hey, we like this. I'm super convenient, boy. Yeah.
If you can come to my house, you could probably get me to do anything. Yeah. If you need me to leave the house, it's going to be a conversation. So the one benefit I immediately saw was in my back. The second one is when COVID hit, and it might've been like sleepiness, it might've been stress. You know, everybody was trying to save whatever companies they were running at that time. But I felt like I've been wrestling with this incredible amount of like brain fog. And I've never had anxiety in my life, but it will become a source of anxiety given all the speaking engagements I'm doing, right? Whether they're interviews or TV shows or whatever that is. And so it was created this tension, right? Today, and I'm going to give a lot of the credit again to being plant-based, like that brain fog just isn't there, man. So I don't know, again, maybe that was inflammation in my brain, but I do feel healthier on a different level, which is why I have no desire to go back.
That's good. Man, funny, from this conversation, I'm going to go back and really work on more body optimization now. Like I'm going to go look a little deeper. And I know I could be doing some supplements. I gotta go do my blood type, so I understand that. I haven't done my blood type. There's some more tests I need to do. Like my guy, Wall Street Trapper, just went. He in the hyperbaric chamber. Like he just went to another level. I think they're doing stem cell replace, like all type of stuff. But they're going fully. They like let me optimize. Even got this scale that tell you how old your body is.
Yeah, I had that scale.
Yeah, I forgot BMI or not it's, BMI. It's something. Some sort of scale.
My scale does BMI, ECG, vascular age, weight, right? Like in like 10 other things.
Yeah. Well, one of my good buddies, he said, you can't improve what you don't measure.
That's exactly right.
So like, you don't even know how old you, I don't know how old my body is.
That's exactly
I can't even, how much body fat I got. So I need to.
That's why you got to get this aura. This aura will tell you your cardiovascular age.
Yeah, that's
happy
good.
To report, I'm 7 years younger than I actually am, right? Wow. So you see that every day, and it's like, I'm going to stay. And if I watch that thing start to creep up, I'm like, nah, I'm going to change my behaviors. Yeah. I want to be 10 years younger than I actually am.
Are you doing any other workouts other than swimming?
So every morning I box and kind of the shadow box, and I box
that
VR.
Boxing ain't no joke.
Man, sweating.
I saw
like
you
crazy.
On Instagram with the VR. So that's,
oh, man. And so, you know, I'm not actually hitting a bag. I have a trainer. Teray, who I go do that with, but the VR is incredible. Just shadow boxing, getting your form right, getting your speed right.
So with the trainer, you don't hit the bag either?
No, with him I work, but on my own and So every morning I wake up, I probably box for 20 to 30 minutes, and then I go jump in the pool, do that for 20 to 40 minutes. That's how I start my
so
day.
So you get optimized from the rip by the hour, good
people,
to go.
And people think that I do things like swimming because I want to be healthy, and I do. And people will say swimming is the most healthy exercise, good for your brain, you know, good for your mobility, no pressure on anything. But I swim because it makes me mentally healthy. Yeah. It's like no matter what happened yesterday, no matter how funky the day was, no matter how bad, it's like a baptism. I jump in that water, spend time in meditation, spend time with God, come out feeling like I'm ready to take on the day. Yeah, every single day.
That's how I do it, basketball, man.
That's basketball for you?
Every day we at 5:30, we at the gym.
In the morning.
5:30, pulling up. We game up by 5:45.
Yeah.
But I feel good when my daughter just graduated, but I'll be back home by 7:40 taking her to school. Yeah. I got my whole day.
Yeah.
People just getting up moving.
Yeah, they just
started. I've already burnt 1,500 calories or something like that.
Exactly.
And for me, I'm at a point where really doing things I enjoy. Like, I don't think nothing wrong with swinging the weights, but I have no real desire of just pumping the iron.
I ain't
like
touched
the
weight in 15 years, man.
Yeah.
And somebody said to me the other day something that I'm keeping with me, which is, if something is not a hell it's a hell no.
I like that.
You know what I mean?
I like that.
My desire to lift weights is not a hell yeah.
Yeah.
My desire to box, absolutely. And I want to get better. Like, I'm watching videos.
Yeah.
I'm self-taught for the most part boxing. I'm watching videos every day. I'm self-taught swimming. I'm
watching videos. Do you watch like Tank? Like Javante?
Of course. I watch everything, try to keep it in my head, and then the next morning try to implement, right?
That's good.
And then for supplements, I'm not going to give you the brand name, but I will send it to you after. I just don't want to do that because I don't want to make a recommendation too soon.
100%.
But I just got this new supplement that's personalized, customized. Yep. So you go take a survey. What do you need? Better sleep, better memory, X, Y, and Z.
And they hook it
and then
up
they
for
literally
you.
Send it to you. And this is Nehemiah's like wow, supplement good. Pack, right? All the micronutrients that you need. So that's what I'm on. And if it works, I'll definitely give you the
record. No, I appreciate that. It's good to hear the health now that I'm on it. Like this conversation, part of the conversation is a lot more meaningful to me now because I'm on this journey because I want to live longer. Absolutely. Like I don't want to be like, well, he could have lived longer, but he was eating bad. He was doing like I used to pig out. So it's hard to believe like, yo, I really don't eat oxtails and lamb chops and burgers every day anymore. It's like, so I feel good about that.
Yeah, I see our life in three forms, right? Like body, mind, and spirit.
Yep.
And I'm always trying to figure out how to optimize each one of those three. Yep.
That's right. Good. Body, mind, and spirit. I like that. What church you go to? You go to church out here?
I don't go to church out here. I would say right now, post-COVID, I'm definitely a virtual attender. So right now, TD Jakes, the Potter's House is where
I got to bring you to change church with me one day.
So I actually want to go. So you just tell me when's the time to go.
We'll pull up together.
I watch him all the time. I'm such a fan.
That's like
I'm
my
such
guy,
a believer.
Guy.
Is he
yeah,
guy?
That's my man.
I'm a believer. So that is the one church that I want to explore here in Atlanta.
I'll take you to the back, meet him. That's my man. Okay. He's just talking yesterday.
So beautiful. Genius level insights, like good human. We'd love to go to church with you, brother.
Man. So for you, man, you went from CMO, well, I
Marketing
thoughts of being a CMO to CEOs of these different brands and stuff like that. Like, what is how big is the leadership process in that? Because I'm at a point where, and you may can help with this, is like, sometimes the team aren't hitting results. I'm on a call that we got to drive to get. Like, how are you addressing? Like, how are you addressing not hitting the targets? And still, like the balance, because when I'm talking like we're not hitting the targets, it's not aggression, but it's kind of like I'm on you. Like, yo, what's going on? Yeah. Why aren't we hitting the targets? So now it might seem. But sometimes that happens often. So I'm like, maybe it's my leadership why we aren't hitting the target. So how do you balance being a great leader and also being assertive?
Yeah. So the way my team runs is we manage our business by OKRs,
our
objectives and key results. And so we start the top of the year, what are our major objectives? What are the key results for each one of those? So every Monday we go through the scorecard. If it's green, we don't talk about it. It means whoever that leader is, it's under control, they got it. If it's yellow, it means they're probably gonna make their goal, but they might not. And so then we have a conversation around what do you need from the people around this room to hit your goal? Is this just a you thing, or do you need somebody else or other people around the table to help? And if it's red, it means they're not going to hit their goal. And that's where we really got to dive in and focus, right? So that's one. Two, when I think about how I lead, there's a couple of things. One is absolute accountability. And so I think that's a big part of what you're talking about, getting people to be accountable. Some of the process just allows that because I'm forcing people to be accountable to all of their peers. We're going through the things we've all said we have to do this year. And if you're red week after week after week, there's a natural accountability that's built in. Two, there's an accountability for myself as a leader. Like you said, is this something that I'm doing wrong or not? Three is the conversation that we have with them. But the fourth piece that I wanted to say is my goal, like I like to hire what I call humble giants, people who are the best at their craft without any of the arrogance. And so if I've done my job and the people around the table are all humble giants, then you actually don't usually have to scream at somebody who is best at their craft. First of all, they already feel the weight of missing.
And
the same
I don't
way,
scream, but you know, it's kind of like, yo, what's
aggressive.
Going on?
Yeah. Like, again, accountability, right? But like real superstars are gonna show up wanting to be accountable. Like, you're not missing your goals and feeling okay about it, right?
That's good.
And so one, that should be a part of the process. And then two, the way I talk to them is I try to talk to them like the stars that they are, right? Like, yo, I've been saying this thing has been red for the last 4 weeks. I know you can turn this around. If there's anybody in the world who can fix this, it's you. But it's like my language is to be more uplifting, more empowering, more belief. And then again, at that point in time, it's up to the leader to figure it out. But that's pretty much the way that I attack it in terms of my accountability.
Now, how long do you give them until they just not getting it? Like, you having that conversation and things keep being missed. I sometimes find myself saying the same thing over and over again, and we talked about this. Mm-hmm. I don't like talk. I'm okay with mistakes,
sure,
but I don't want to repeat that one, yeah, the same mistake.
Absolutely.
Because how we growing? How we getting past this thing?
Yep. So for me, I don't know that I have a set time frame for any individual. You know, I think it's probably a little bit individualized for me. But what I do is once I get to that point where I'm like, okay, this thing may not work, then what I do is have a conversation. These are the five things you got to hit in the next 30, 60, 90 days. And like, I want you to be here. Like, I wouldn't have brought you here if I didn't want you to be here. But if you can't hit these, if you can't get it done, then we got to find a way to separate, right?
Yeah.
At that point in time, in my opinion, the ball sits squarely in their court. You will either show up or you will not show up. And again, everything is quantitative. Everything is measurable. Yeah. And so it's not subjective. There's no question on whether you hit it or not. Right?
That's good. I like that. Let me ask you this. So one of my guys, he sat down with my buddy Alex Hormozy. And I'm sure you're high level leaders. Are you a part of that interview process at any moment or no?
If anybody who gets interviewed in my company?
Yeah. Like
only a hand, like if you're working for me, of course, if you're on the executive team, 80-90% yes.
Okay.
Anybody else is just on specific. And usually those people, you know, I'm trusting the leaders to interview them for capability. I'm interviewing for cultural fit.
How are you identifying if they had that or not?
So at Revolt, we have values. We have our own beliefs. We have the things that we stand on. Yeah. And so I'm going to run them through a bunch of those questions to kind of see where they land. I think, we're a brand that believes in things like linked prosperity. We're a brand that believes in creative freedom, creators being like, so I'm going to walk them through all of our beliefs and make sure that they feel like they can stand 10 toes down on it. When it comes to how we work with each other, there's another set of values, whether we're talking about, you know, Black excellence or, you know, in all things aiming for greatness, or I'm just a big believer in like the best ideas that move culture, ideas that move the world. And so having conversations with people to see how they fall amongst that dimension. And then the last one that I do is I'm a big believer that me personally, I only want to solve the puzzles that I was put here on earth to solve. Mm. And similarly, I only want to hire people who are solving the puzzles. The puzzles I give them, I need them to be the puzzles that they were built to stay, that they were put here to solve. And so one of the questions that I ask all the time is, what gives you energy?
Yeah.
Like, I could give you this assignment. Sorry. So what gives you energy? If I give you this assignment and it's due in 6 months, what are the things that you would get done in 2 weeks? Not because I forced you to, because you just love them.
Because yeah.
You're going to stay up working on it all night long just because you're excited about it, yeah. Right? And so I get that list. And then I say, what are the things that take away energy?
What are
the things that remove energy?
Mm.
And so then after that, I'm trying to match up the job I'm trying to give them with the things that give them energy and the things that take away
that's
energy.
That's good. That's right? Fire.
Yeah, that's why I
spent. I had one of my guys, like I read, and let me know if you believe, he said, they're not a rock star. If they're not a star in their first week, they won't be.
Mm.
Do you believe in development? Or you know, like you said earlier, like, certain leaders, they gonna hold themselves accountable. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, like, oh, I'm gonna hold, or is it a thing where, hey, I'm here to help you constantly develop, or are you looking, like you said, I'm looking for the best automatically.
Yep.
So that's probably looking for a star in their first week.
Yeah. I would say, I think you absolutely know a dud in the first week.
Yeah.
I don't think you always know a star in the first week. And even Revolt, we're 100% remote. And so figuring out how to navigate a remote situation cannot always be the easiest. And so I believe in, you know, this thing called the law of the lid. And ultimately, as a leader, your job is to figure out how high the lid is for the people who work for you and support you. And so do I believe that somebody can come in and on week one, this be their lid, but over 90 days, their lid get a lot higher? Absolutely, right?
Yeah.
Again, if it's a dud, I think it's a dud. The last way that I'll say this is a book called The First 90 Days. Have you read that book?
No, I haven't, but I'm going to. Okay. Yeah, I'm going to.
First 90 Days I read before I take any job, even though I've probably read it like 10 times. But the core idea is even the president of the United States only has 100 days to create impact. Wow. And so every time you take a job, you have to think about how you go from zero to 100 days providing impact. That first 30 days is all information gathering. It's all learning. It's all assessing what type of company am I in? What are the politics, X, Y, and Z? The next 30 days is like you're starting your strategic planning. Like, yeah. All right, this is how I move the needle.
Yep.
Those last 30 days, you putting points on the board.
You're getting right? busy.
Exactly, yeah, exactly. Yeah, so, like you know, would I give somebody more than a week? Absolutely. I think, you know, at least 90 days to 100 days, you can tell whether people got it in them or not.
That's good.
Yo, I've had the privilege to help hundreds and hundreds of people all around the world open up their own profitable event spaces utilizing my signature formula. Number one, how to find the space. Number two, how to fund the space and how to automate the space. I've been in Atlanta, Georgia now living for 2 years. My spaces are still in Philadelphia operating, doing extremely well because we use the same exact formula that I break down, right? If you're interested in learning how we can help you, I want you to go to eventspacesecrets.com, watch a training or book a call with our team to see if you are a good fit. Again, this is for you specifically if you're looking for other ways to leverage your money and turn that into other streams of income, right? I don't believe there's a better time than right now for you to get tapped into the information in the game that can help you. So again, go to eventspacesecrets.com, watch the training or book a call with our team to see if you're a good fit for this opportunity. Let's go.
Even I'm just thinking about like sports. So you could take a star, you're going to put them on a new team, but it's going to take them a second to learn that system. It's going to take a second for the people around them to learn how to work with them, right? So I think I'm just saying that in my mind, I think there's a little bit of time. That
100%.
There's another idea that's...
That makes sense, though.
Right? Like, yeah. There's another idea that's like you go when you're... Whenever you bring a new person into a group or whenever you're in like kind of like organizational change, you go from storming to forming to norming to performing. Mm. So the first piece is storming. Everybody got their own ideas. You came from wherever you came from. You think your way is best. It's like chaos, right? After you push through that chaos, things start to form. You start to form how the team works together. Once they start forming together, then you start developing norms, right? These are the norms. This is how we work together. Again, the system. This is how the system works with all of us. And if you get to the last phase, which is where you really want to be, it's performing, right? Yeah. But every time you drop a new person into a system, your team is going to go through some version of storming, forming, norming, and then your job is to get them to perform in.
That's good. Let me ask you this. So you're creating things like Revolt World, like the big, you're talking about amusement, you're talking about culture, you're talking about music, you're talking about entrepreneurship. How are you as a CEO deciding what we're going to focus, what's going to be initiative in this season? Because those things are huge, whether they work or don't work.
Yeah.
Right. So how are you saying, hey, oh, this is what a focus needed to be on 2025, 2026, 20, understanding that every year the landscape and things are changing frequently.
That's right.
How are you making decisions as the CEO on, because they always talk about how most CEOs, you know, they only need to make a couple key decisions. Like, so what are some things that go in your mind when it comes to making decisions from your point of view?
Yeah, I think you nailed it. I think the CEO's job is not to be, it's to know the details without doing the details. And if I'm the one who
has... Say that one more time.
It's to know the details,
without doing the details. Got it. Okay.
Right? And then if I have hired a team of rock stars, then it shouldn't be me who's coming up with all the ideas and what needs to happen.
Listen to this episode, you probably understand having one source of income is too close to none. And as one of the wealthiest people in the world, Warren Buffett says, if you don't find a way to make money in your sleep, you will work until you die. With that being said, I am finally exposing the industry to this very unique, very secretive way to make money in real estate that no one is talking about. No, I'm not talking about wholesaling. No, I'm not talking about fix and flips. No, I'm not talking about rehabs, right? No, I'm not talking about flipping contracts. I'm talking about event spaces. And what I'm going to do, I'm going to go ahead and show you for $300. I'm going to waive that $300 fee and give you access to my free masterclass where I'm going to show you how to find your own location. I'm going to show you how to fund your own location. I'm going to show you how to automate this entire process. The same process that I help hundreds and hundreds of people do, I'm now pulling back the curtains. I'm going to help you do the same thing. So what I want you to do right now, go to eventspacemasterclass.com right now. Go ahead and register. And as soon as you're done, go back to the episode. Once again, go to eventspacemasterclass.com. I will see you in our next class.
Happen, it should be them coming back saying, this is where the culture is. This is what we need to be doing. And so I trust the team, long story short. But from my side, like, I'm also studying culture and I'm also saying what is needed. And so as examples for Revolt World this year, one of the key things I gave them was like, yo, I mean, look, the political thing is going to be a big thing and Revolt cannot not have a big voice and Revolt World is going to be a big moment and a big time, right? So we got to make sure that we nail that. But from a high level cultural perspective, I just feel like our people are in so much need of healing. You know what I mean? Like every time you watch social media, you see men and women going at it. Every time you turn on social media, you see people from across the Black diaspora, Jamaicans going at it with Black Americans going out with Africans, right? Like our culture needs unity. And so that's the type of thing that I would give them. Like, yo, this year, I need y'all to really make sure that you're delivering something that is uniting us and bringing us together as opposed to ripping us apart. Yeah. And then I'll wait for them to come back and tell me what that answer is.
That's good. Yeah, I like that. That's a good thing to do. Like, had the rock stars figure some of this stuff
out. 100%. Like, my job is guidance. Like, I'm the king of giving my team a brief. Here's the brief. Here's the objectives. Here's what you got to do. Here's what you got to hit. Here are key considerations. Here are my mandatories. The rest of it is for you to go create. Yeah. And when I talk about Revolt being a home for creators, it's not just creators who are on the outside. Like, we're hiring some of the dopest creators on the inside, right? And so it's also like you can't micromanage them and keep your foot on their neck. Otherwise, why'd you bring them to the table, right? And so you got to give them enough room to play and paint, which is what I try to do.
One of the things I saw that y'all recently did was y'all made several of the employees owners. Is that a key point of, tell me a little bit about that. Like, I'm assuming another reason that make people really committed to.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? Like, I'm putting effort in, but I also benefit as this grows, as the volume Absolutely. Increases. Give me a little bit of mindset around that.
Yeah. So the shift to make. So right now we just made history.
Yeah.
We just made history by making our employees the largest shareholder group in the company. It's not just a few employees that will get stock. It is every single full-time employee who will get stock, which is again, it's history. Never been done in Black media, never been done in media to my knowledge, not to this scale. And I'm not sure, you know, I've studied it. There's a few companies that, you know, got an ownership pool of 80% of their employees or 60%. But in general, like, there's not many people out there doing what we're doing. And we did it all because, again, we believe in this idea of linked prosperity, that when Revolt wins, everybody should win. And so the entrepreneurs who work with us, they get to win. The creators who work with us, they get to win. They get to benefit on the upside. And so this was a way for us to allow and enable our employees, the people who come to work every single day, to benefit from the success of the company. And then to your point about, like, does it give your employees, does it give the people who work there a different sense of ownership? Absolutely. It's like, we all know that there's a difference between renting and owning, right? When you're renting something, you know you're only going to be there for a year. You know you're only going to be there temporarily. Yeah. You don't give it the same time, care, attention, love, et cetera. And you leave it in whatever version you left it in.
Yeah.
When you're an owner, when this is your house, you're going to pick up every single thing on the carpet that you see this month. You're going to wipe the desk down. You know what I mean? Like, there's a different level of ownership that you feel. And so I can already feel that thing happening within the company. And so my job is now, you know, I'm trying to figure out, how do I educate the team so that they truly understand how we build wealth together? Now we got to get into P&Ls. Now we got to get into valuations. Now we got to get into maybe multiples, right? Because I want people to be able to draw a direct line from the work I do every single day and how it helps us all build wealth as a team, right? That's not a conversation you could have a month ago, right? But now it's a conversation that we can have for the rest of our lives as long as we're all at Revolt.
Right, and not only that, it's also a conversation where now it's not just a job. I'm purposely educating myself on how I can move this company forward with the role that I play.
That's right.
Like, I want the most out of this because I'm going to benefit.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, I don't know if I've been struggling, not struggling, but I want to do more around ownership and around, I don't want to say whether it's better bonus. Like, I want more of my team involved in different areas so they can have that same. I wake up, go hard every day because I'm going to benefit.
That's right.
But also, I got to go hard because if I don't go hard, certain people won't eat. Your family won't eat. So that's right. Like, I'm self-motivated. I don't need
you know
many
your
things.
Why. Yeah, I know.
I got to go make something happen every day. So those.
I'm looking forward to, you know, the company's about 100 plus strong in terms of full-time employees. And so I'm looking forward to seeing the difference between 100 renters and 100 owners. Yeah. You know what I mean?
How are you navigating virtual, bro? Like, because I know, like, virtual is like, I don't believe people are giving 100% on virtual. Like, I got people, and I'm like with freedom, but like it's some, like, I got to go get my kids from school. I got to go do this. It's all during the work day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And I don't say anything about that. I got to go do this. But I'm like, if you were in the office, you would be here. And I spent some time with my team, and we're virtual too, but we worked together for like 3 days together. Everybody had laptops together, like people was in there.
You can
see like they were rumbling.
Yeah, I'm like,
whoa, I can see a drastic difference when we're together and like really putting that work in.
Yeah, full transparency. I feel the same. Like, I definitely think I love being virtual. Right now, we have no plans of being anything but virtual. But I do think that there is a drop off or a difference between people working in the office every day together.
Yeah.
Specifically when you talk about collaboration, specifically when you talk about like more creative endeavors, I definitely feel like there's a difference. And so our kind of philosophy was like, okay, the team is happy. We've been thriving being remote. We've had, you know, instead of having to put millions of dollars into real estate, we're able to put millions of dollars into content, into employees, into other places. And so rather than going backwards, let's just try to fix what this thing has broken.
Yeah.
Right. And so what are some of the things that we've done to try to fix that? Right now, every quarter, I have every person from my exec team fly into the same city and we spend a week together. Right. We call them core weeks. And that's where we just together and we jamming and we just talking about what do we need to do for the quarter? What's next? What's hot? We may have
how many people on that executive team?
Probably close to like 20 of us always fly in, right?
That's a nice amount of people to fly in.
Exactly. But again, it's and if I'm saving money on the building, I can find the money to fly 20 people in, right? And so we also will do training. We'll have what do you call people who come in and lead you through sessions or whatnot, right? Like that type of stuff. So anyway, so that's core week. On top of core weeks, we have a mandate to have in-person gatherings every month just to create spaces for the team to gather. We haven't been as good at this one yet, but we will get good. Our town halls, which we do monthly, I want whatever city you're in, I want those folks to be in. I go, you know, I travel a lot, so I'll do random happy hours.
Yep.
I'm in New York this week. Everybody meet me meet me at such and such, right? So it is just trying to find all the ways to say we don't jam the same when we're not together. How do we create that? We need community. People are lonely at home. How do you solve for that? And then the last thing, which you kind of talked about, which is, you know, do I think people are working 40 hours a week, 60 hours a week, 80 hours a week? At the end of the day, I've resolved it in myself to say it is not the amount of time that they spend working. It is the outcomes and the results that they're driving that matter. And so as long as you are driving the outcomes and the results, then I'm not digging in your business to see if it took you 20 hours to do it or 80 hours to do it, right? If you're not delivering the results, then it's a whole different conversation.
Yeah, that's good. Let me ask you this, because I know from going to a few of y'all events, like, y'all heavily get corporate sponsors. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of my guys, Earn Your Leisure, they're getting corporate sponsors now, but it wasn't a thing at the beginning. most brands struggle getting corporate sponsorship that is not a notable brand, like a most big, if you're not an Essence, if you're not a Revolt or Earn Your Leisure, yeah. Like most smaller brands, like all of our events are all self-funded or funded by the people who come to the event.
Yeah.
What can brands do, or what are y'all doing to position yourself or corporations to say yes to, you know, to be a sponsor, a title sponsor at Revolt World, to be a title sponsor for this, what are some things that these brands can be doing to position yourself? Or is it only, is this just a relationship based thing?
Yeah, no, it's a great question. Okay, where do I want to go with this? So first I want to say, look, you're dealing with big brands, right? So you're talking about companies,
AT&T, Verizon,
right? Billions Facebook, of dollars a year, yeah. Right? And the people they're spending hundreds of millions of dollars with Meta, hundreds of millions of dollars with TikTok, yeah. Hundreds of millions of dollars with Google, right? And so then for a lot of our Black-owned businesses, we're not operating at that hundreds of millions of dollars, right? And so what I think often don't understand is one of the reasons why brands will spend with people like a Revolt is because you have to have the systems in place to catch the money,
yeah,
right? And so how do we build that system? One, just the whole organization.
Like when we say systems in place to catch the money, break that down.
Yeah, so compare a Revolt who has an internal agency, a cable network, digital, social, live events, mm-hmm. Podcasting, right? However, brand A, however you want to spend your money, wherever your bet is, we've built the ecosystem so that we can take it. Not only have we built that ecosystem, right? So that wherever you tell me your focus is, I can do it. Two, you're surrounded by teams that will take care of you. Your sales team, client services team. Our biggest, we have an internal agency. Our biggest clients not only have a seller on it, it's they have a dedicated client services team giving them white glove treatment, making sure that everything is perfect, right? And so that's the difference between, so they're going to come to us as opposed to other people that are going to be more run and gun. You don't know what it's like, that type of a thing, right? It takes a lot to be able to work with a Fortune 500, Fortune 100 brand, which is why key to our strategy when I came, one of the keys was building the internal agency. Because the way the media game works is people will RFP you. It used to be, okay, we're going to RFP BET, Revolt, TV1, et cetera. The person with the best idea either gets most of the money or all of the money. And so having a dedicated agency team that can take the brief, what do you want to do? Okay, you're really focused on video, you focus on Gen Z millennials who do X, Y, and Z, and then a team of dope creatives who can come back with branded content or just ways to leverage our asset and our ecosystem to deliver their goals. Again, if you're a smaller company who hasn't built those systems, you don't know how to run that play. Our decks look beautiful. And while as simple as that may sound,
that's a big piece.
Because brother, if your deck looks beautiful, if your deck looks gorgeous, as if this is the type of work you do just to pitch me an idea, then of course when you do the podcast we're going to do together or the branded content piece, like the details, the aesthetic is going to be beautiful,
that's
right?
That's good.
So it's all of those things that I think so often our people just haven't had the opportunity to know. But it's really about building systems. Here's the other way that I want to say it. I'm a big believer in the brief. Every brand has a brief. You can't just walk into a brand and tell them what you do and what you want out of them. You got to understand what is your brief, and then you got to take what you have and you got to come back and pitch it to them. Yeah. And then they have to feel comfortable that if they buy that idea, that you have the system to catch it. Give me white glove service. The work has to be the highest quality. If I'm buying audience or impressions, you're going to deliver every, right? Like those systems. Yeah. I think that's what a lot of our smaller businesses are missing. Not because they can't do it, but maybe just because they don't know to do it.
Let me tell you, what's the staff of an internal agency? Is this a copywriter? Is this a graphic designer? Is this a sales director? What does the pod look like for internal agency?
Great question. So our internal agency is combined of research and insights. Yeah. Because every time a brand is going to come to us with a brief, we're going to go get the data, go get the insights, and then come back and tell you, here's what we know about our audience. We know them better than you. And yeah. A, this is who they are. B, this is why the ideas I'm about to pitch to you make sense. So there's research and insights. There's integrated marketing teams. Their specialty is really, how do I take what a brand wants to do and deliver it across this ecosystem in a way that hits their goals? To the side of that, you got like almost like a development team, a creative services team. So they're working together to come up with the, okay, we're not just going to sell you a show that's on Revolt. We're going to come up with a big branded content idea that's going to be worth millions and millions of dollars, right? So then you have that team making beautiful decks. And then let me see, and then the client services team.
Yeah.
There's a client services team that's like, all right, you're now part of this system. These are the two people who you can call at any point in time to make sure you know where your project is and how the business is doing.
And this is those clients, they're dealing with these brands, whether sponsorship opportunities, whether, hey, we're going to create you a commercial AT&T, like those, I'm going to handle everything. I'm almost like a project manager.
And there's a project manager in that system as well. And a lot of the deals, again, you're talking about a $10 million deal, you're going to have all of that. Yeah. You're going to have their buying just pure media. You're going to have their sponsoring some of the shows or the hit shows that they want to be around. And you probably have custom content or branded content that you created just for them. And that's what I'm saying. Like that, knowing those three things and that system and being able to deliver that and say, okay, now we need a $10 million check. Yeah. That's the secret.
That's good. See, and that's good. So most brands don't get the money because they're not prepared to get the money.
100%.
Makes sense. That do make sense.
And then we're small and we're black. So again, they just want to work with Google and Meta. So to come down to something that's going to be $100,000 deal, they don't want it to be a whole bunch of work. They don't want it to be a headache. It's not worth it, right? Yeah. And so you got to prove to them, on like, we got this. We're going to handle it. It's going to be perfect. It's going to be turnkey. You're not even going to have to sweat it, right? It's going to come back exactly the way you want. You're going to get a wrap report at the end that tells you exactly how the thing performed. That's what they want. That's what they want from you.
That's good. How important is the diversity and inclusion department of these companies, the Google, Meta, Amazon? Is it? How important is?
DE&I is under attack right now. So,
I've been seeing the Fearless Fund and stuff like that.
Bro, like, I thought.
Which is crazy.
It's insane. Yeah. Like, for me, it's like, how do you live in a country that is all about liberty and justice for all? All men are created equal, but we can't say the words diversity, equity, and inclusion. Like, it's absolutely mind blowing to me. But, post the murder of George Floyd, people started building up their DEI departments. Money started flowing to black folks like never before. I thought we were going to have until the end of 2024. My hypothesis at the time was Trump will be the president in 2025. The money's going to flow up until then. And we have to run as fast as we can, get as much money as we can, build as many capabilities as we can, because in 2025 it's going to be a whole new ball game. What I didn't see coming was the affirmative action decisions last summer. And it's like, and even though that was just about education and it was just about quotas, it sent every company, every brand scared. And so like, I'm in these rooms, I advise a lot of CEOs of Fortune 100 companies, CMOs of Fortune 100 companies, and everybody's trying to figure out, how do you continue to invest and do the things that you believe in from a diversity, equity, and inclusion standpoint without being sued, without being canceled? And so they've put this massive threat on the other side. And so from my opinion right now, the only people who you're going to see in the game are those ones who really believe it, which is not actually a bad thing, right? There's a lot of people who got into the game for performative reasons. They just wanted to check the box. Now the brands that you see, when you see them, when you see a Pepsi stand on it, they standing on it. When you see a Chase Bank stand, they're standing on it. You know what I mean? So the world's a little bit different and it changed a lot faster than I thought. But DE&I is always going to be important. It's just right now is under significant attack within corporate America.
That's good. What are some things you're doing right now as a lead for you to stay on top of your game? Or are you reading certain things? Are you going to certain events? Like, what are you doing to keep you sharp outside of your health stuff that you're doing? We talked about earlier is a mix of mind and body, though. Yeah, so what are you doing, I guess, tactical or strategic, that's just keeping you where I'm able to advise Fortune 100 companies. I'm on top of my stuff.
Like, yeah.
What are you doing to stay sharp?
Yeah, without question. So reading, that's like the biggest one. You got to make sure you're reading, and I'm reading everything from Twitter to just Apple News to, you know, kind of like my go-to publications that I go to for information, just so that I can have what I believe is the lay of the land. The way that my brain works is much better in conversations like this. Yes. And so a lot of it is about, I process out loud, I think out loud. And so I also have to put myself around a lot of smart people like yourself, just so I can go back and forth, hear what I'm thinking, they're thinking, and then kind of formulate my opinion from there. You know, truthfully, what I would say, you know, I'm without question a man of God. And none of this is possible without God. And so much of it is the energy that I give to my spiritual walk. Yeah. And so whether that is prayer, whether that is meditation, right now, you know, I'm just living. Like, I haven't listened to something that isn't gospel for probably the last 6 to 7 months. Wow. Just because I needed to keep my vibration and my frequency. Yeah. Like, what I'm feeding myself every single day, reminding myself that anything is possible with Him.
Yeah, that's good.
So a lot on that front is what I've been doing to keep myself healthy. Let me see if there's anything else. Those are probably like the big ones. Oh, you know what I'll say? The last one I'll give you, even though it may not make sense to a lot of people, is like, I'm just such a big believer in safe spaces. The world is on fire. I'm far from a celebrity, but I am somebody, you know, I'm probably one of the youngest, if not the youngest person in Hollywood who has green light power. Yeah. So that means any and everybody wants something from you, a show, a podcast, or whatever. And so one of the biggest things that I do is, when it's time to work and be out and about, like, I'm all about it. But when that's not what it is, I'm with the people I love, the people who know me, the people who don't see me the people who don't see me any different than just Daytavio. You know what I mean? Like, there's no CEO of Revolts on it. There's no keynote speaker on it. There's
chilling.
Like, safe spaces. And I think that goes a long, long way in keeping me healthy.
That's good. It's almost like a good balance almost. Yeah, I love it. What are some things and we're probably going to get ready to wrap, but I always like to ask, being at the high, what are some struggles that you could be facing? Because I know sometimes we paint as everything is good or not even, it don't got to be sure, but as I'm rising to grow a media company, people are listening, growing a media company, what's some things you should be looking out for? Mm-hmm. Because now I've learned, I'm about to write a book that I'm working on, and it's just mistakes to avoid, like things that you almost don't know until you get here. Like, understanding the tax code at an advanced level is a key that you don't know. You're not thinking about that when you're not making any money, right? Forecasting, like, okay, when a pandemic came, all of this money came in, will this be like that in 3-4 years? No one's thinking about 3-4 years, right? So what are some things that I guess entrepreneurs or people should be looking out for, looking to try to navigate or stuff like that you see?
I'm just going to ramble for a second. We'll see how many I come up with. So the first one you asked is like specifically in the media space, and anybody who's looking to start a media business or is already in the media business, what I would want them to know is that just the media business is in a complete state of chaos, right? It's like digital killed radio and news and magazines, right?
Yeah.
Shifted to digital publishing. Digital publishing has basically been gutted by social media, right? Now, back 10 years ago, 15 years ago, everybody was going to CNN.com. Now we just go to social media, see the news
that's it.
And we don't even go read the article 99% of the time, right? And so social media took digital publishing out. COVID took theaters out. And streaming, because they didn't have to be profitable at the time, took cable out, which is why you have this like intense cord cutting that's happening there. Now the streamers have to be profitable. And so the whole machine is broken. And so, you know, a couple of thoughts about that is wherever there's chaos, there's opportunity. When everything is working, it's only the big guys that win. It's only the Disneys and the Paramount. When everything is broken, there's massive opportunity for the little guy. And so what I want to say is there's a lot of opportunity in media, but it's going to be really difficult to find because this space is just in such a state of chaos. So that's one.
That's good.
Two, maybe I won't even count them again. I'm just rambling. From a leadership standpoint, one of the biggest things that they say things like heavy is the crown or it's lonely at the top. And I think all of those statements are true. But I think what's more important than that is understanding why it's lonely at the top, why heavy is the crown. And yes, there's pressure and yes, there's stress. But what I would say is that when you are the leader, there's three different sights. There's behind you, like past sight. There's total sight, the whole company and what's going on. And then there's foresight, future sight, right? What's ahead of you. When you, most employees only have the benefit of hindsight. They can only see what's behind them. When you're the leader, you're the one who understands the total ecosystem. You're the only one who knows everything that's going yep. on in the business, right? And then the last one is, as the leader, again, you've got the strategy, you've got the vision. You may have laid out the next four moves and just haven't told the team yet. So you can see all of that.
Yep.
And so that difference in perspective, the people who only have hindsight versus the people who have hindsight, future sight, and total sight creates a tension. And so I think as leaders, we have to be A, mindful of that. B, have to be understanding that even when we hear our employees complaining or frustrated or whatever that is, it's just an understanding that they don't often always have the same sight that you have, yeah. right? And so the more that you can help close the gap on that, the more you can have an organization that is truthfully like all moving in the same direction together.
Sure.
One thing that I always think about or talk about is like leadership is not about authority. Leadership is not about title. Leadership is not about who puts you in position. Leadership is about followership, right? And so unless you can get people to like anybody, it doesn't matter what level you are. The CEO has to earn followership. You could be a project manager and earn followership, right? We've all been in those companies where some of the most influential voices were not actually the people in the C-suite, right? And so just this other notion that like, if you want to be an entrepreneur, especially in this social media generation where I think so much of it is like looking like you're a boss. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of times it's emulating what was an old boss style, which is command and control. I said, you do, right? That type of a thing. That's not what real leadership is.
Right.
Real leadership is about earning followership, getting people to say they want to work with you. They want to follow your vision. They want to follow your strategy. So that would be another one. How we doing? You need any more?
I'm taking all the games. Yeah, we good.
Let me see if I have anything else that's like top of mind for entrepreneurs. As you're, oh, one of the biggest lessons I've learned in this seat being an entrepreneur at Revolt is that if you want to raise real money, you got to learn to talk crazy. It's like nobody wants to fund the idea that's only raising $500,000 because $500,000 doesn't feel like it's going to get to a $10 billion business idea.
Yeah.
A $500,000 raise doesn't feel like it's going to get to something that changes the world. And that's where people make the most money, right? Mm. And so if you watch something like WeCrash, did you see WeCrash?
No,
you should definitely watch that. It's a scripted, like almost documentary, but scripted story of WeWork.
Okay.
And I forget the exact.
And they crash too.
And they crash, yeah. right? But they crash because he understands that you have to talk crazy to raise the money. And so
he raised that money.
with no real business model, no real business. And so that's the idea. I think that we as Black people get so caught up on like meritocracy and everything being perfect and da da da. No, sometimes you just got to walk in the room with the biggest vision, with the biggest dream, ask these people for a couple hundred million. And I'm not saying anybody can do that. I think there's different levels and different layers of being entrepreneurial. But if you are someone who thinks you want to build a $1 billion company, you're going to have to learn how to talk crazy because that's what people respond to. They want the craziest dream. So when you hear me, you know, when you see me on like interviews, I'm sitting here like, we're going to dream bigger. We're going to dream blacker. I told people for 4 years, we were building a Black Disney. We're a nine-figure and revenue media company. Disney's $80 billion in revenue.
Crazy.
I'm saying that so that people understand I'm not building a nine-figure media company. Yeah. I'm trying to build a $100 billion, right? Like I'm just anchoring you on what my truth is. And so I don't know if I articulated that right or correctly, but there's definitely something to learn that if you think you really want to build a business that's going to change the world, you got to learn to talk about it like it's going to change the world. You got to learn to ask for the money that will allow you to change the world. And more than anything, you got to make sure you have the dream that makes people feel like you can change the world. That's what people buy.
You're selling the vision.
100%. Yeah. And it can't be small.
People that work with you, donors, are selling the vision.
100%.
That's good, man.
I'll tell this story. So the first time I had to show Sean Combs, my vision for Revolt. It's a virtual Zoom call. We get on the call. He asked me one question. How much are we raising?
Yeah.
Now, at this point in time, you know, company probably valued, we probably just crossed valuation of like 9 figures. But I know I can't tell him like $1 million or $5 million because he's a person of magnitude. He ain't getting out of bed for. Yeah. So I tell him $100 million, right? Man ends the call right there.
Yeah.
This dream ain't big enough, right? Damn. Just from the money I was asking,
wow,
wouldn't even look at the deck.
Right.
The dream isn't big enough, right? Wow. And so that's what I'm talking about, like learning how to, what it takes to unlock the type of money that we actually want to create generational wealth, change the world that we live in, create equity and justice. And like the dreams have to be so big, and big dreams require big money.
Yeah, that's good, man. This has been fire, bro.
It's good. Yeah, we're good.
Very insightful. I appreciate it, man. It was good. I think you touched on everything that gave me so much game, and I'm sure our viewers are going to get game from the leadership to taking care of your body, to optimizing your body, to dreaming bigger. Like, I think I got to remind myself that every now and then, because you get into the game and you just stop dreaming.
Exactly. Like,
it gets redundant.
Exactly.
Right? So you got to keep reimagining things. One of the books I was that I read earlier on was the Magic of Thinking Big. Just got to think bigger, because it takes the same amount of effort.
That's it.
I tell people, I'll be like, yo, say this for me. I'm gonna make $1,000 today. Now say I'm gonna make $1 today. It's no difference.
100%.
I'm gonna make $1 million today. I'm gonna make $100 million today. It's no difference in saying it. So I think that's important. So
it's no difference in saying it, and oftentimes there's no difference in the work.
That's
right?
A fact.
Right? Like the people who are making $40,000 a week are probably working the same, if not sometimes less than the people who are making a million. You know what I mean? Like,
that's crazy.
And I always just say, like, you know, show me the size of your dreams and I'll show you what you're capable of.
Yeah.
Right? If you're dreaming small, you can only accomplish small things.
Yeah,
it's not possible. You don't get to dream small and then some big magical impossible thing happen on the other side.
Fat D, thank you so much for coming on the show. Let everybody know how they can tap in with your brother and anything you want to share with the people you got going on.
Detavio Samuel, CEO of Revolt. You can find me on social media, all things Detavio, Detavio. Brother King, thank you for having
me.
I've been watching for a while. Just love the work that you're doing. Feel so honored to be here that you would have me in this space.
We're gonna go to that church soon.
Yeah. I look forward to going to church.
Sitting here, I'm like, yo, you know what I want to do with Darius? I want to do like a faith and business, like a dinner.
You got to do it.
Just invite like 30 people with him, because I think just as much as making money is good, but building your spirit up, and
100%.
That's just as important, or more.
100%. And for me, the two go hand in hand. So like, if you just want to look at what Detavio can do in the business world, it's this, right? When you put God on top of it, it's this times 10.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So for me, it's like, I can't separate. They go
hand
in hand. I like
how you stand on your, it's often times where it's separated. You know, I can't really talk about that. You know what I mean? You like, no, God is in the center of this. He's in the center of what I'm doing.
That's it.
And I ain't acting like it. He's not here.
And I don't have a choice, because the reason he enables me to do what people see as impossible is because he knows that I will always point to him. Mm. I will always leave room and create space to point from him. The second I start making it about me and how great I am, or like, is the day I think all of this stuff dies. You know
that's
what I mean? And so that's just me and his deal, right? Like, I'm taking you in every single room that that's I good. Go in, because I wouldn't be here without you.
That's good, man. Well, thank you so much.
Kang, appreciate you, brother.
Hey, guys, with that being said, another amazing show. We'll see you on the next one. Peace. Peace.
Hey, thank you so much for tuning in this episode. I hope you're getting extreme amount of value. I want you to go ahead and comment below, share with me your biggest takeaway. In addition to that, my number one goal is for me to be able to grow all of my social platforms so I can give you info, insight, strategy, and gain from every platform there is. So take a minute to follow me on Instagram at Neil DeViso, same exact name on Twitter, same exact name on TikTok, and follow me on LinkedIn at Nehemiah Davis. I would love for you to be able to be tuned into my articles and everything that I drop relating to helping you get to that next level in your life. Tune in.